We take our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. President Trump defended his environmental policies at a special address this week. The Secretary of Labor is under scrutiny for a plea deal he struck with a serial sexual predator during his time as a prosecutor. And the president is continuing to fight for a citizenship question on the 2020 census, despite a Supreme Court ruling against it. Our question for you this week, what do you think of the president continuing to push for this citizenship question on next year's census? Should he put it to rest? If you're a supporter of the president, do you see this as a distraction, or does this reinforce why you support him? What do you think about his willingness to go against his own cabinet officials on this one? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Tolu Olorunipa is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, I want to start off giving a listen to President Trump. He gave an address talking about his administration's environmental record. Here's a bit of his opening remarks.
For years, politicians told Americans that a strong economy and a vibrant energy sector were incompatible with a healthy environment. In other words, one thing doesn't go with the other, and that's wrong, because we're proving the exact opposite. A strong economy is vital to maintaining a healthy environment.
Tolu, what did the president say in making the case for his environmental performance as president?
Well, the president was trying to make the case that his administration has not been hostile to the environment or to environmental activists who make that claim and say that this administration has been rolling back all kinds of regulations that were aimed at protecting the environment. The president is saying that, yes, he has rolled back various regulations, but at the same time, he says that, you know, carbon emissions have continued to go down and that, you know, the water quality and the air quality in the country continues to be good. He's basically making the claim that his administration has been able to boost the economy while also protecting the environment. It's something that is strenuously opposed and disagreed with by activists who believe that this administration has been very dangerous for the environment. But the president wanted to make the case that he believes that his administration is balancing both boosting the economy while also protecting the environment and protecting the water and the air that all of us use.
This is not attached, apparently, to any kind of legislation or initiatives out there. Why this issue and why now for the president?
At this point in this administration, you cannot divorce anything that the president is doing from politics and from his reelection. And there was a sense internally within the president's campaign that he needed to do something to reach out to suburban women, moderate voters who care about the environment, and show that he hasn't been, you know, this wrecking ball to the environment and to environmental regulations that protect the environment. So there's a lot of reporting that shows that the president is aware that he has some ground to make up with suburban voters, suburban women in particular. And this was one example of the president sort of using an official event at the White House to speak directly to some of those voters who are concerned that some of his policies are a little bit too extreme, and show that he's not an extremist when it comes to sort of rolling back environmental protections, but that he can speak to their issues and speak to the issues that they're dealing with while also showing that he can continue to boast about a strong economy while balancing strong environmental policies as well.
Some of the reporting on this points out that climate change emissions have gone up in the United States, again, in the last couple of years. That may not be all, of course, because of anything coming from the White House. But does the president have some, I guess, reality and science problems as he makes this pitch?
He definitely does. This is a president who has said that wind turbines cause cancer. He's talked about climate change as a hoax. So both the White House and various advisors and aides to the president and members of his cabinet have had trouble defending the president's comments in the past and his focus in the past by trying to show that, you know, not only does the president not believe that climate change is a hoax, but that the president is taking actions to clean up the environment. So there are some numbers and some facts and figures that don't line up with the president's claims, including his claim that the U.S. has the cleanest air and the cleanest water in the world. It's something he claims very regularly that does not stand up to scrutiny. But it's something the president continues to say because he is much more focused on the headline and much more focused on getting across a message that he is not an extremist on environmental issues, but that he is continuing to uphold the strong environmental policies that that previous presidents have. We even heard from his administration that, you know, they're taking credit in some ways for the reduction in emissions going back to the 1970s. And they say that, you know, now we're much lower than we were in the 70s. And that is not necessarily taking into account just what happened in the last couple of years, where we have seen some of that progress stalled or rolled back, but taking credit for what's happened in the last 40 years under previous presidents as well.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa from the Washington Post, looking at some of the big news in national politics. Turning now to the citizenship question on the U.S. Census. You can weigh in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. So we saw, Tolu, the U.S. Supreme Court reject this citizenship question, saying they didn't buy the White House arguments, didn't completely shut the door on it. But then we heard the Departments of Commerce and Justice saying, okay, we're giving up on this. It's going to the printer. It's done. And then what from the president?
And then a tweet. And so many of our stories begin that way. And then the president tweeted. The president tweeted last week that the fight was not over, that he was continuing to push for getting this question about citizenship on the census, that he was basically overruling his top government Department of Justice lawyers and members of the Department of Commerce, who had said that they were basically throwing in the towel. The president was saying that this question is too important, we're going to continue the fight. And that led to the Justice Department rushing back into the court, saying, you know, what we said previously was no longer the case, that the president is pushing us to try to find some rationale for why we can put the citizenship question on the census, even though the court said the previous rationale was contrived and was not appropriate. The Justice Department is now looking for a new way to explain why they need to have the citizenship question on the census. That's led to an effort by the Justice Department to bring in a whole new team of lawyers. The judge basically rejected that effort, saying that time is of the essence. You can't bring in a whole new team of lawyers in this case that is basically, you know, past its deadline. The Justice Department had previously said that they had to start printing the census. They had to have a resolution by the end of June, or else they wouldn't be able to make their deadline for the census. We're far beyond that now, and it's not clear what the argument is from the Justice Department as to why they need to have this question on the census and how they're going to go about making this case to a judge. So President Trump definitely threw a wrench in the argument and made things much more difficult for his administration. But he has shown that he is going to continue this fight as long as possible.
You wrote, Tolu, about the political angle on this legal argument and the president's motivations in keeping this fight going, even if he doesn't ultimately win. What kind of things are you looking at?
Yeah, this is a president who, according to one of his biographers, would be much more willing to lose in a dramatic tear down of a fight versus losing quietly and being seen as someone who's throwing in the towel prematurely. So a lot of this is politics, and the president wanting to show his base, wanting to show his voters that he is going to the mat and not giving in, not giving into the swamp or to the career Justice Department lawyers who would be much more willing to kind of take their ball and go home and say, you know, the judge has spoken. It's the president that says, you know, we're going to exhaust all of our opportunities, any angle that we might have, even if it means an executive order that defies the Supreme Court. We're willing to go to the mat. And members of his base give him credit for that, that he is a different type of politician, that he doesn't take no for an answer, that he's willing to fight when others would be more willing to throw in the towel. And the president and some of his allies believe that he gets some benefit from that. Even if he loses in court, even if a judge strikes him down, he can say, this is just a rigged system and I'm fighting hard for your interest against the rigged system that is, you know, arrayed against you. So that's sort of the political angle that the president is viewing this through. And we've seen him take on losing fights before where the courts have struck him down over and over again, but he still tries to get some political benefit from saying that he's willing to fight and not give in, even though the odds are very much stacked against him, as they are in this case.
It appeals to his base, as you say, and it seems like it might not really cost the president anything. This isn't something that's necessarily going to turn off, say, moderate Republican voters.
Yeah, and that remains to be seen in terms of how hard the president chooses to fight this. There aren't that many voters outside of the president's base that are following this very closely or that would vote based on the census issue. It's not really a top issue for voters. Now, if we do get to a point where there's a constitutional crisis and the president is defying the Supreme Court and it looks like our government is in chaos, that is something that could turn off some moderate voters, some people who just want the census to go off without a hitch as it has happened in the past. So it remains to be seen what types of red lines the president would be willing to cross here. But I think you're right that there aren't very many voters that are going to turn away from the president or that are going to choose to vote against the president based on this issue. And it just really remains to be seen how hard the president is going to fight and whether or not if he pushes things too far and we do end up in some sort of constitutional clash, that then, this becomes much more of a top of mind issue for voters who may say this is a little bit too far from what we want a president to be doing with his power.
Talu Olorunipa is with us, White House reporter for The Washington Post. We're looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Development on a story today, Talu, this ongoing case of Jeffrey Epstein, this multimillion dollar hedge fund manager, apparently facing new charges of sex trafficking involving dozens of underage girls. He'd made a plea years ago in a Florida case. Now, a prosecutor there, Alex Acosta, now Secretary of Labor. A lot of questions being raised for his treatment of that 2008 case. Complicated story. Can you explain what has people asking questions about the deal and some Democrats saying Acosta should go?
Yes. Acosta just held a 53-minute press conference where he answered a lot of questions from reporters about the controversy surrounding this case. This was a case that he was involved with when he was the U.S. attorney down in Florida back in 2007 and 2008, and he basically executed a non-prosecution agreement with Jeffrey Epstein, which allowed Epstein to more or less get a pretty lenient sentence. He stayed in jail for about 13 months. He was let out on work release for a good chunk of that time, and he was only charged or only had to plead guilty to one charge of prostitution, soliciting a prostitute, when the evidence showed that he was involved in what was basically sex trafficking of underage girls. Dozens of young girls who were teenagers were basically trafficked by him and by some of his associates. And there's now a new set of indictments several years later after some investigative reporting out of New York that indicates that some of the conduct that he was engaged in back in the early 2000s is actually conduct that should be charged at a much higher level. So now Epstein is facing charges that are that could lead him to spend the rest of his life in jail. And there are a lot of critics of Acosta who say that he should have pursued these types of charges back in 2008. Acosta says that that was not possible, that the times were different, and that he did not feel as confident in the evidence and that he had back then. He said that new evidence has since come to light out of New York, and that he is happy that this man is being charged, but that he does not regret the way that he handled the situation back in 2008. And now that he is a member of President Trump's cabinet, there's a lot of pressure on the White House, on the administration, to do something about Acosta. And one wrinkle in this case is that not only did Acosta negotiate this pretty lenient sentence, but he also kept the details from the victims, the young girls who were pleading to him and to the Justice Department for justice. They were left out of the process. They were not informed, and even a judge this year has said that decision to not inform these victims was out of step with the law, that Acosta and his associates broke the law by not informing the victims about this non-prosecution agreement. So this is a pretty big controversy now that Epstein has been arrested and is being charged with pretty serious crimes of, trafficking dozens of underage girls. And Acosta is on the hot seat now because he was someone who was very intimately involved in the non-prosecution agreement that allowed Epstein to get off with what many believe to be a far too lenient sentence that only kept him in jail for a little more than a year.
We'll follow more of this story. We're working on getting the Miami Herald reporter who had followed a lot of this on the show. Maybe watch for that next week. Right now, it's our weekly roundup of national news. Tolu Olorunipa is with us from The Washington Post. Turning this court ruling, Tolu, on President Trump's critics on Twitter, some people who he had blocked as followers had sued and won in a federal appeals court this week. I want to start us off here with a caller and go to Max in Two Rivers with his reaction. Max, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think it's his own account. Although he posts stuff about, you know, political issues and whatnot, I think he still has the right to block somebody just like anyone else does. The president is no different than the average person. It's just a job. But I think it's not so much when he blocks somebody, it's not him rejecting people in a political discussion. I feel like most of the time it's people trying to troll him and mess with them.
Max, thanks a lot for the call. And to Max hitting on some of the key points in the legal case here, right? What kind of things can a public official do on their Twitter feed? And when does it cross the line into becoming, in effect, their government actions on that Twitter feed?
Yeah, this is a new territory for the legal system to jump into in terms of, you know, the privacy that politicians are able to have. Social media is definitely a different set of rules that they have to follow. Now, the First Amendment basically gives the public the right to know what politicians and public officials are doing in terms of government purposes on social media. And the judges in this case basically said that by blocking people from his Twitter account, President Trump is blocking them from the public square. This is a Twitter account that the president has used to make news, to announce new policies, to give announcements that the public could use, even to give warnings to people who are maybe in harm's way for natural disasters. So the judge basically said, this is a public forum, and it's not in keeping with the First Amendment to block individual people from being able to access the information on this account. It is definitely a new area for the courts to weigh in, and there are some privacy concerns here. But it is, you know, as a reporter or someone who, you know, relies on the First Amendment, there is a clear sense from the First Amendment that government officials should not be restricting the access of the public to publicly available information that it could be used, that they could use to, you know, help themselves or to be aware of what the government is doing. So for government accounts, there are very strict rules about what can be done on social media. And in this case, the courts are saying that those rules apply even to the president, even on an account that was, you know, previously a private account, but now is used as the main account for the president of the United States. And it remains to be seen whether President Trump complies with this ruling and decides to unblock all of these people, or if he seeks other legal recourses. But it is a very interesting ruling, and it could have reverberations for future politicians, future presidents, and other public officials as well.
Time for one call. Thanks, Max. We'll go now to Yordis in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi. I have a general comment about Trump, and when you say that he's a different kind of politician, I would argue that he's really a dictatorship in the making. He's testing every rule, every ethic, every principle in this country, and he is pushing the limits. And this is maybe appealing to this cult-like following he has, but it's traumatic to people that are compassionate thinking people that really try to follow the rules and appreciate democracy and all its fullness and complexity. I'm really disturbed when people act like this is, he's not a normal politician, as if this is some great new thing.
Yordis, thanks for calling in. Yordis concerned, Tolu, that this is just, this Twitter issue is one more example of what she sees as a consistent theme of bending the rules by the president, briefly.
Yes, there are many instances of the president bending rules and trying to push norms and breaking norms and pushing boundaries, and it really will remain to be seen how the public responds. We did see a lot of members of the public vote against that type of behavior in 2018 in the midterms, voting for Democrats instead to try to rein him in. 2020 looms, and there's a chance that the president could face a backlash for causing so much chaos and causing so much constitutional concerns about whether or not he is withholding or upholding the rules and norms of his office. And voters will have the ultimate say.
Curtis, thanks for the call. In our last 30 seconds, a change in the Democratic field. Congressman Eric Swalwell out, billionaire Tom Steyer in. Has anything really changed with that, Tolu, in our last 30 seconds?
Well, I'm not sure that much will change because both of those candidates are polling pretty low. There aren't many changes when it comes to the top of the field, the top five candidates who have been getting all of the traction and the attention. One thing about Tom Steyer is that he does have a lot of money, and if he decides to deploy all of that for his campaign, it could shake things up a little bit, but he has not been able to gain a lot of traction so far, and he's been more or less campaigning for the better part of the last year.
Tolu, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
Tolu Olorunipa is a White House reporter at The Washington Post. He was with us for our weekly check-in on the top stories in the nation's capital. Still time for you to weigh in on this court ruling on the president and his Twitter feed, saying even in his personal feed, because he uses it a lot for public business, he's not allowed, the court says, to block people. What do you think about this? You can tweet us at Central Time WPR and let us know what you think. And you can always email ideas@WPR.org. What should be the rules for social media use by not just the president, but any politician?